Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, all three of us in person. The TMO shipping container is now docked once again, no longer on its French excursion. I'm here, I'm Tim, with JB.
Hello, Tim.
Who is naked, footed and OnlyFans ready. The foot spa was causing some interference on the line of his microphone, but we've sorted that out now. Sentences I never thought I'd say. And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Hello. Right, we've got lots to talk about on this one. We've got actual domestic rugby to talk about.
Phenomenal. Fantastic.
Amazing. It's back. I mean, I don't think it should have been so long since we saw a Premiership game, but I'm glad the Premiership is back.
Yeah, I am as well. I mean, I don't know, after you brought that up last podcast or a few weeks ago about the gap, it is substantial. It's going to take a little while to get back used into Premiership. I mean, even this week I was trying to work out what am I watching, what's important. It's going to take a few weeks.
Yeah, who's good, who's not good.
Yeah, well,
yeah, and
who's going to return.
That seems to have changed very much in 7 weeks or 8 weeks since the last game.
Well, it kind of makes sense because the teams that were previously doing well had slightly more players representing their countries. And the teams that were not doing so well had very few players, so more time to prepare as an entire squad for
but
this round of games.
When we broke up for the Six Nations, Gloucester were a bunch of losers, and they've come back as champions now.
that has happened as well.
That's a pretty good way to reboot your mindset.
Yeah.
And what was the gap between, was it second and seventh, is like separated by just a few points?
Yeah, It's hardly anything. I'll just get it up now.
And then there's
you go.
And then there's Newcastle.
Second, so it is 10 points, but it is only one win. So Bath in second are on 8 wins. Sale, who are in free fall, they've lost their last 3 games now. They are they're actually in 8th place, but they're on 7 wins.
See, if,
so
if
one difference win.
Sale, if they hired Steve Diamond, they could finish 6th. Right, so we've got all that to talk about and the other rugby going on. But let's start with, well, firstly, let's start by me saying thank you very much for listening. And if you haven't already, hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We are the only podcast there for you 52 weeks of the year, not just when the big international games are on. We're there during fallow weeks, during off-season, during pre-season,
exactly.
and during the big weeks as well, the money weeks. So if you appreciate that, hit subscribe and get more content at patreon.com/eggchasers. And thank you very much. If you're a new patron, we're getting loads all the time. Really appreciate it. And some great extra content there. So patreon.com/eggchasers. And you can get in touch with JB on
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
And Beardmore & Co. Independent Financial Advisors.
Beardmore to the power for Independent Financial Advisors. You can go and get more content at Egg Chasers Rugby on YouTube. Or you could just, I don't know, take an avid interest in online forums discussing parquet flooring and you'll probably find Phil lurking somewhere.
I've given up that. I'm never again. I had fun while I was doing it. Oh, no, I didn't have any fun. I love it. Now I've done it. But never again.
A necessary evil.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I will pepper the podcast with some emails that we've had at contactedchasers@gmail.com.
Most of our emails now are people trying to give you things or make you sell things. That's the other thing. got so many. Who are all these companies that want to monetize YouTube?
Chances, mate. They're chances.
They are, aren't they?
They're saying they want to monetize you. Oh, we can help you unlock value. What they actually mean is, we want you to sign away a chunk of your value on YouTube, and in exange, I don't even know what the rest of that sentence is. They just seem to want your money.
Well, to be fair, if Acast had came to me today and said, we will monetize your podcast, I would think that they were trying to split. It actually worked out quite well.
Mm. Fair.
Yeah. I have no idea what these people do.
No, but the fact that they email about 7 times a day leads me to believe they're...
They've done not much else on.
I feel like I'm being spammed. Anyway, so we'll talk about all of that stuff. I'll pepper the podcast with emails. But let's start with the law changes, because that's something that happened just after we podded last week. I think mainly you two podded last week. Thanks for taking up the slack on that, by the way.
It's okay. All good. Anytime.
All good. Did you have fun, by the way, in your dinner party?
Oh, mate, I totally picked the right club in my beloved Bayonne.
Did you? So, why don't you save that for the Patreon later?
Yes, I'll do that. Yeah. I'll reveal all the French secrets a bit later. But all I will say, just as a headline, is, oh, my God, it's not just that the budgets are bigger, the players are better, the coach, the league. It's the interest in French rugby is just off the charts.
Really? Well, it's a bigger part of the culture there.
Yeah,
and like football is enormous in the UK.
Yeah,
and it's not as enormous. Obviously, there are still some big clubs in France, but not to the same scale.
So,
whereas for many of these towns, The rugby club is, like, if you go to Toulouse...
I'm so glad you mentioned that one, because I've come away and I've asked a few people this and no one's been able to give me an answer. If you can, contact deadchasers@gmail.com. But I went to Toulouse, and that is a city with 1.2 million, I think, is the population.
A good-sized city.
So yeah. I'm gonna say there is not another city in Western Europe of that size, a million or more population, where rugby is the number one sport.
Is it the number one sport, though? The reason I say is it the number one sport, because the football stadium is still bigger.
No, it's the number one sport.
Okay.
Mm. Toulouse Rugby Club has 13 amateur teams.
Wow. So I could play for Toulouse.
Yeah, you could.
Interesting.
It's awesome.
I remember, I've not actually been to Toulouse Centre, but I've flown in and out of Toulouse. And there, it's one of the main things that you notice. Like, yeah. You notice rugby before you notice almost anything else.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Even Airbus or sausages, they're two other famous exports.
when you go to the ground and you just see all of the Brennus trophies, all of the European Cup trophies, they're Real Madrid of rugby.
They are, aren't they?
It's like that when you think of what would be the equivalence in other sports, like Ferrari and F1.
Yeah. Opportunities you just don't turn down.
Yeah, like the New England Patriots in American football. To lose in rugby.
What if it is the Patriots? I'm not sure if there is. Do you know what? I'm not even sure there is one in American football.
Because
definitely used to be the Patriots.
Yeah. By definition, intended to even playing field.
The Yankees in baseball.
Yankees in baseball, yeah, that's right.
And I'm not sure they have one in... Do they have one in basketball? I'm not sure they do.
No, maybe not because American sport is so well organised.
Yeah, so evenly organised, intended to be fairer.
Yeah.
Maybe someone like the Packers, maybe. Or Steelers. Steelers is cool.
Steelers is cool.
Steelers is very cool.
I'll speak more about that on the Patreon podcast. But the law changes. Law changes. So, Phil, you've got your spreadsheet. You've got your laptop open. Probably some spreadsheets prepared.
No spreadsheets, but I've got the World Rugby release, because I've seen a few little write ups of this, and I've read the World Rugby's own write up, and I don't think any of the other third party write ups probably cover all of the points, because there's a few in here that are interesting to us for various different reasons, mostly because we've been saying some of these, not all of these things.
Yes, definitely, we have.
But some of these we have been saying for actually many years.
Many, many years.
So
first of all, can I just say, whatever you're about to tell me, I already hate it.
Let me just tell you a couple that you've been calling for. Now, some of these are law changes immediately. A couple of them are. Yeah. Some of them are probably going to come in May. Some of them are more long term, may or may not come in.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that have been talked about, and you'll love this one: if an opposing team does not compete at the line out, you do not call a throw in not straight.
Love it. Love it.
And we've been saying that for literally years.
Love it.
Years.
So that one is on the phase three.
Yes.
Which is, there's going to be closed law trials, and if they're successful, they can be voted in.
So that will happen probably in a year's time. But
yeah. Yes. So we'll go through the three. Well, actually, there is a fourth phase. But
the point being, there are some you'll really like.
No, I hate it. Just before you continue, I hate any law changes, no matter what they are, which happen during the season or even the next season. I think there should be something like a 2-year gap between proposing it, deciding it, confirming it, and then implementing it.
I hear what you're saying there.
Yeah, I do. It's interesting because the first round of these law, let's say these laws are not law changes.
No.
This is
enforcement
and application of existing laws.
Mm.
So the first three, which fall into that category, law 15.17, players will be expected to use the ball more quickly when the ball has been secured at a ruck or breakdown, and referees will be asked to call use it earlier, which will begin the 5-second count. So it's basically enforcing the use it and 5 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, it is a law. If it's going to be a law, it's a law, isn't it? You've got to referee the law.
Yeah, you say that, but as Phyllis said many times, there are so many laws on the books which aren't enforced, and the sensible thing to do is either reiterate that you enforce them or take them out.
Yeah.
The best example of which is the feeding at the scrum. During the Six Nations, it's got to ridiculous levels. To the scrum, the hookers don't hook anymore. The ball goes in straight to...
Don't even get close
to hooking. It goes into the second
row. The hookers have to strike now.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
They do according to the laws, but that doesn't mean they always do.
So they had a clarification on this only 2 years ago, which was the hookers have to strike because they were getting these massive front rows, like in the basically over like Richard Hibbard when he was a Lions player, and they just bind up. They were enormous, and they just go forward.
Yeah,
so right, you need to strike.
So I don't believe that law is being enforced.
Probably no, I've not even.
Even if it is, even if there is a notional strike, as in the hooker crosses his right foot over his left foot for a second, it's being fed anyway. There's no competition for that ball. Now, that's actually one that I don't necessarily hate, as in it speeds up scrum. If you were constantly hooking, it would be an absolute nightmare. There'd be collapsed scrums everywhere. Well, there'd be static scrums.
It isn't at amateur level, but I suppose this is different.
It's like a least worst position for me. But the law shouldn't read that the ball should be put into the middle and fed in straight.
Just very quickly on that one, they were quite hot on this, and it might even be as long as 7 years ago now. And the reason I remember this was because one of the Premiership finals kicked off. It might have been the one where Exeter. I want to say it's Exeter. One of my favourite passages of play. And in my mind, that ball was in the centre of the scrum for about what felt like a minute. It's probably 10 seconds. And it just stood there.
There was one in 2017 or 18, England-Argentina.
Yeah.
With Will Collier playing tight.
Yeah, they just did.
It
must have been Bath, because I think we asked Rob Webber about it.
Bath Saracens in 2015.
Yeah, I want to think it was Bath Saracens. And he just said, it's either Yendl I asked about it, or it was Webber.
I think it might have been Webber. And he was like, there's so much pressure, I just could not lift my one of my...
He had to wait for the pressure to come off.
My striking foot up.
And the ball was just sitting there in front of his face. I was like, I'll try now. And that's exactly what it should be like.
Yeah.
So that leads us on nicely, talking about hookers striking, to law 19.10. Hookers will be expected to maintain a full break foot to aid scrum stability and safety during the engagement sequence.
Okay, well, fine. Yeah.
And so that's I think,
I don't
associated with the axial loading.
Is that not
situation.
Happening?
I've not noticed that not happening.
No, I've not.
Yeah, I haven't, but I wouldn't notice if it was happening. So it's kind of too
who's noticing this, I wonder?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like a big...
Austin Healey?
Maybe after tonight's...
we'll come to that.
...incidents. I wonder if that's actually hookers mentioning it.
Yeah.
That their opposition are not doing that. But
anyway, an internal thing, like internal feedback or something. Maybe.
And then the third of the application of or enforcement of existing laws, law 6.29 or 29, strict reinforcement of the 2022 law trial relating to water carriers entering the field of play.
Neil Jenkins, are you listening?
I have.
And a few others.
Right, just on this water carrier thing, I was thinking about this, and I do not understand why it needs to be anyone to do with the team. There's two solutions I came up with. I did mention this on the YouTube video. Apologies if it's doubling up, but why can't it be kids like it's ball boys when the referee calls time off? Just have kids take. Or why can't you just have like a couple of maybe on each 22? Just each team has a little stash of water, and players can just go over and get it themselves.
I have zero problem with water carriers.
No, but it's all the tactical messaging and stuff. Good. Just let the players get on with it.
No, I like it. I have no problem with it whatsoever. Like, the more brain power we can bring into a game of rugby, the better. And if this is how they want to do it, I have literally no problem with it. I think it's one of those things that people get very, very upset about. And now it's a law, people get even more upset about it. But if Razzie Erasmus wants to carry water all day, he can carry water all day. I remember Jason Robinson was carrying the water bottles. I mean, carrying the water bottles actually is like a really good teammate thing to do. So the reason I brought up Jason Robinson, he was doing that when he was signed originally from rugby league to Sale Sharks when I was in school. And he was used as an example by the head teacher of what a good teammate looks like because he's running the water on. I have no problem with this.
I don't particularly have a problem with it. There are some weird videos of, not Razzie, but individuals within the South Africa team almost in the defensive line, shouting at the South African team. To be clear, I don't think that does anything at all. It's just a bad look. It just looks really bad. If people are going to complain about things, they're going to complain about something like that.
Well,
I don't think Lucanio Am or Damien Diolande are listening to...
Oh, God, I wasn't going
to
bother getting off the line.
Now you've said it.
Well, I've got one. This is a very niche one. Remember Pat Lam doing it?
I don't...
Pat Lam did this, but not as a coach, as a player. He was either substituted or carded during the Heineken Cup final against Munster. And in full kit, he is on the sideline encouraging the boys. I can't remember if they were defending or they were picking and going, but there's just an extra player there. There's an extra player on the sideline and he's going mental, telling him to get off the line. I'm sure it was in defence. And in the end, the officials had to remove him because you can't be in your kit.
Yes.
Semi-coaching, 2 metres from play, from play.
Yeah, you definitely can't be doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, fine.
So those
are all like immediate reiterations of existing laws.
Yeah, there is no law changes. They're just going to be doing it. And I do like the use it.
Yeah.
Like the Six Nations.
That's just a no-brainer.
I felt it got a bit ridiculous. There was one in...
It's about they're saying it and they're not doing it. That's the bit that's ridiculous. I don't mind the time, but just don't say it.
There was one in the Six Nations. I can't remember which game it was. That I counted 15 seconds from the use it, and then 15 seconds later until the kick is made.
Yeah.
Which is just... Because the scrum half takes about 7 or 8 seconds to actually get it to the point. And then once they get it to the point, they get into position, crouch down, and then look up. And if someone's off the line, they'll give the eyes and then bury a few more seconds.
The only problem with this is, how do you get around it without a quiet count? So what I mean by that, if it's 5 seconds, the referee in his head has to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Now, the alternative to that is the referee to count aloud.
Which is what was happening.
Ben O'Keefe, apparently,
Ben
was
O'Keefe
doing
in Super Rugby.
Week.
Which, again, isn't a problem.
Quite a big ask on the ref, every breakdown.
It's an ask no matter which way you look at it. Because if he's got a count in his head, he may as well be shouting out loud. I think I'd rather have it out loud because it just reminds me to do it.
If Joe Marler's on the pitch, he'll do it.
Well,
evidently.
Yeah, so this is it. So if it's in your head, other players will be counting. And if you get that count wrong, Joe Marler will be in your face. And that's just not a good look. But if you are counting loud and someone is onside and then comes offside to play the ball, you can't really, as a ref, argue that he can't do that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Maybe on 5 seconds, the ball's live and the nine's going to get walloped.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you take it out of the ref's hand, you could do it, but it seems unnecessary. And you actually have someone, like, you know how someone's got the ref doesn't press the shot clock button to start the minute. Someone presses the button, 5 seconds later, a whistle or a horn goes off.
Well, not wanting to get ahead of what you're talking about.
I don't think
about.
You should do that.
No. Sorry, your mic leads just come out.
Oh, that is an alternative solution.
Yeah, but just, I know it's later on in the phase three, but I think I don't want more shot clock in rugby. I do not want
the shot clock I'm okay with. But yeah, I don't want that solution for.
But just to touch on that, where do you stand on shot clocks for lineouts and scrums?
No.
And this is just one of the things that's been proposed. They're going to trial with a view to bringing it in.
You've got to let the boys set up for the scrum, right? You have to.
No, I don't. Now, I don't buy this.
I completely agree that it is a bit boring and whatnot.
I don't buy this.
But so many times, if you rush it, I think you'll get a worse outcome.
I'm not saying rush it. I'm saying you can go. You can safely go much, much quicker than they do.
But my worry would be if they didn't set up properly, more scrums would go down.
But the ones that take all the time in the world still go down.
Yeah.
So I just don't buy it.
They're playing games that to bring it down on purpose. I don't know.
I can't help but think few would go down because it's. I don't know. You've got there's less importance if you're getting it through it faster. Certainly in the old days. There was no one cleaning their boots. Everyone would just pile in and just get on with it.
Here's one of my thoughts about the shot clock. So the reality actually is that over the last few World Cups, there has been more ball in playtime. Mm-hmm. But because the messaging from rugby about its own sport is we need to bring in the shot clock because there's time, blah, blah, you're almost highlighting the elements that you don't want to be highlighted, and it amplifies it and makes it perception-wise feel like a bigger deal in exactly the same way as rugby's never been safer, never been more awareness about head injuries, players' welfare's never been more top of the agenda, and yet, because of all the things you're pointing that are being pointed out, we're doing this to solve this problem, we're doing this, what you're actually saying is danger, 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 and the perception is a wildly disproportionate.
It doesn't actually make it less dangerous. So people give examples of a sport like wrestling, right? And the reason I use wrestling is because they've removed everything which is dangerous. So like the locks, chokes, gouging, everything which is dangerous, they've removed. So what actually ends up, now you've removed all the dangerous stuff, is these guys just go harder and harder and harder, because you are allowed to go hard, because you will break something eventually, but you've removed all of the dangerous stuff. It's not dissimilar to scrimmaging. So scrimmaging started where it's just free for all. I think it was even like two people in the front row at one point, I think.
And wow, was that going back like
a 2-3, whatever it was, and it was a 3-2 with the back row and all the rest of it. Now, as that process has got more and more sort of like finely tuned, so the props, it hasn't actually solved the issue of things like injury or more people playing. It's made propping extremely exclusive to a handful of individuals who can do that skill over and over again because they've removed all the other aspects from it. It's extremely specialist now. It's not solved any problem.
Yeah. Mm. So I can't remember what we were...
So
shot clocks for...
Shot clocks.
Oh, yeah, shot clocks. I just think the shot clock... There's a couple of things. They've almost... They're pointing a big finger at, look at this thing that we don't like. Everyone, just pay attention to the bit that we don't want you to... That we don't want you to pay attention to. And the 90-second thing is like, how many times have you seen kickers go, all right, I'll just chew the clock up. I don't actually need anywhere near that length of time. Yeah. It should be more like American football, where they have 40 seconds from the getting a touchdown to kick the extra point.
Yeah, there's no reason that can't happen.
You probably couldn't do this, but... You've got a total amount of time in the game.
I love it. You've said that before, like a chess game.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. And so, if you think you're going to score a lot of tries, you've got to be fast from the start. Or you've got one. If you score your sixth, seventh, eighth try, you've got 1 second to drop goal it every time.
I see.
Or maybe there's a minimum 30 seconds from try being scored for every try. But you have an extra amount of time over and above that.
Yeah,
perhaps. But then you could have a point where, like, last kick of the game, you can sit there for 3 minutes.
Yeah,
and do nothing. So, anyway, so shot clocks. But probably with regards to scrummaging, which JB's just talked about, that probably leads on to the most contentious one, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, so we'll go on to phase two, which there is a contentious one in there, and two probably uncontentious ones. So the non-contentious ones in phase two, which are... These are recommended for global adoption at this point in time. The first of which is basically outlaw the DuPont offside kicking.
Explain it to me again.
So if if you are upfield of the kicker mm-hmm. on your team,
yep.
You can stand still
yep.
and be played onside when the opponent who catches the ball moves 5 metres.
Yeah.
So DuPont was one of the first to highlight this, and it's one of the reasons, actually, that South Africa called a mark from a scrum, because France were having the kind of lazy runners, if you like, loitering upfield.
Yeah.
Further than 10 metres away from the guy catching it, but not much more than that.
And not actively retreating.
Not actively retreating. And as soon as, had Damien Willems caught it and run 5 metres, those French players could have just gone and hit him. And they don't have to wait for the kicker or someone behind the kicker to run them past side. Them and
so
play them onside.
I
side.
Never knew that was a law.
No, the game was played for years, and no one spotted this loophole.
It's always been a law.
Yeah.
But no one... Because if... Until... Am I right in this? Until your kick, you have to be actively retreating. As in, until... While your team has got the ball, you're in a massively offside position. Therefore, yeah. you have to actively be working to get yourself back onside.
Yes.
But as soon as you kick, you don't actually have to be actively retreating. You can just stand still until the point in which the opposition run 5 metres or you are played onside.
Yes.
So I heard from a ref this weekend that if you catch the ball, if the opposition catch the ball but don't come forward, you cannot advance onto them.
Correct. Which is what happened with Finn Russell during the Six Nations. Yeah. He just stood there with the ball on his hip, and the French players just stood still.
And no one was... The weird bit in that was no one from France, ordinarily, the person who kicked the ball or someone behind him would in 5 seconds put them onside. But because the French team were not bothering to have someone playing the team onside because of this law, nothing was happening.
So it seems to me that is a solution to the law, isn't it?
You have to play someone onside.
Well, the opposition, catch one, don't move.
Yes.
That seems to be the obvious solution.
Well, yeah, Finn Russell could have theoretically just stood there for as long as he wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until France, like Tomo Ramos at the back, went, oh, okay, fine, I'm going to have to jog forward and play my teammates onside.
Yes.
I just leave it. I like how it's developing. Just let the coaches and the players decide how to use this.
I did say I quite, as a spectacle, that Scotland-France game, I liked it, and I said this on the pod, because you can actually see over the last, say, 2 years, 18 months, the route that law has taken, that law that's been in existence for, I don't know, 50 years, 100 years, has taken in the last 2 years, how it has developed to get to precisely that point. I'm not saying I want to keep it forever, but... I don't actually mind it that much.
No, I want to know how coaches deal. Coaches are really smart. Like, when you get to the top level, well, at least some of them are. The ones that I've spoken to are incredibly smart. And they think about this stuff, and they'll come up with all sorts of different weird ways to do it. And, you know, just let them do it. There was one I heard of the other day, and it was something like a line-out and putting your sensors really close to the line-out so they could have, like, little interplay, because there's a gap from the line out to the defensive line. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was smart. And like just tiny little things like that.
So the second one in the law amendment recommendations for global adoption, which I don't think will be controversial, although I would argue it should actually be in the first phase, immediate application of existing laws, is, and this is the phrasing that World Rugby use, outlawing the practice of the croc rule, reinforcing player welfare focus.
Yeah, I thought that was illegal.
Now, that is illegal. That is, you just have
I
to...
I thought it was illegal, yeah.
You have to enforce law... What law is the rook? Law 15, 15.12 and 15.16 B, which those two say, in a rook, players must endeavour to remain on their feet throughout the rook, and players must not intentionally collapse a rook or jump on top of it. And it's enforcing those two.
And also that catch-all that JP Doyle always talked about, just foul play.
Yes, yeah.
Dangerous play.
Reckless and dangerous play.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I am surprised it's in that category, but I don't think anyone has a problem with...
No, so that'll be ratified in May.
Yes.
Yeah.
How they do it will be... Because from that, it sounds like they are going to bring in an extra line of law. And it might be, I know, JB, you've talked in the past about no rotational force, no torque in the ruck. But yeah, we'll see how they do
if,
that.
If law one of rugby was don't be a dickhead, that would be covered.
There wouldn't be many lads left playing it, though. It'd be an absolute nightmare.
Fine with that. The third one, the
second phase is removal of the scrum option from a free kick, reducing dead time.
Removal of the scrum? No.
I knew that. Thought that would be your reaction. I totally agree with you. No.
I'm okay with this.
Go on. Justify yourself, Phil.
So I would never say removal of a scrum from a penalty. So because penalty, teams getting dominance, you want to scrum again. I would never take that away from a team. But a free kick signals that, certainly if it's a free kick from a scrum, the scrum has clapped through no fault. Therefore, I don't really want a scrum again.
No, but there wouldn't be a free kick if there was no fault.
It's collapsed.
But that would be a reset.
Reset
not,
scrum?
Not a free kick. So here's an example. World Cup.
Why would you get a scrum World free Cup kick from a scrum then?
For early engagement?
Yeah, but then you have free kicks, then the penalty. I've been penalised for early engagement.
Yeah.
So you have a warning free kick, and then...
So I agree with you. So the one thought with this is, teams could use this as a get-out-of-jail-free card if they're getting pumped in the scrum. They can just deliberately close the gap, for example, give away a free kick infringement, and then the opposition cannot scrum to get the penalty. Now, what referees, as you just point out, would do is repeated infringements, a free kick would become a full penalty. However, the team could know they could use that get-out-of-jail-free card once. And if you were England in a World Cup semi-final against South Africa with 74 minutes on the clock, it would be one of those times when you might use that get-out-of-jail-free card.
Potentially, yeah.
And therefore, because early engagement, free kick, can we scrum again, sir? No, you can't.
I'd love it. And then bloody one of the South African props just throws the ball forward onto the floor. Your call, boys.
Whoops, butterfingers.
Not again.
Yeah, still no sign of a no knock-on law or anything.
Not yet.
Here's one thing I would quite like. On a knock-on, let's say, for example, I would be, and this is a more radical thought, not the no knock-on law, which I would love to see trialled, just to see what it looks like. But here's another one I'd like to see trialled. When there's a knock-on, you get the option, free kick or scrum. So if you want if you want to use a dominant scrum,
You can.
If you just want to tap it
and
play, you can play.
Or spiral bomb or whatever.
That wouldn't take away a team being able to positively use something they perceive as a strength.
You might, this is a real stretch, you might actually improve it for strong scrummaging teams. So I was just thinking about France-Wales then, where they're giving up 10 kilograms a man, and the trope on the TV was, Wales are fitter because they're smaller. No, they're not. But you could legitimately, if you're Wales, go, we just need more fit guys. We can get away with this because we can give away all of our scrums now.
What are you talking about? If you had the option of free kick or scrum? Scrum.
So you could just say, right, well, we'll just free kick it all the time and we will get much smaller props, get some smaller second rows, but we will be legitimately
and
fitter.
This is exactly what I thought.
However,
and then you've got Portugal or countries with limited player pools but high skill levels, Japan, suddenly they can...
Or somewhere like Kenya.
Just slow your roll.
Kenya.
Slow your roll a second.
Yeah, go on.
Slow your roll.
Cool.
Because they do this and they're great on their own ball, but on opposition scrum time, it's an absolute bloodbath.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the problem.
Yeah.
So France would actually
trade off,
be
isn't
even
it?
Better.
It's a trade off.
You'd have to. So you get the fitter players, and it's also an incentive for you to up your skills because you never want to knock the ball on.
No.
You can't knock the bottle on.
No,
it's impossible. Yeah,
but then, if you're not big enough to scrimmage, you're probably not big enough to get over the gain line. And at this point, then you've got a whole new set of problems with your skills.
If you can consistently play 25 phases, you're going to be.
Yeah, but you can't. Can
you're going to be fit enough.
You would be so ragdolled that if you're giving up 10 kilograms a man, you'd be so ragdolled by
trade-offs, isn't it?
Rope a dope.
Trade-offs.
Good luck.
Do you not think if you wanted to keep the scrum as a positive thing that teams could really use as a weapon?
No, I'm not saying don't do it.
No.
I'd love to see these teams getting battered. Do it.
So yeah,
I have no problem with it, but it's just not the avenue I would choose. I mean, it's an avenue you can choose, and you might also have a weird situation where they get two teams like this. So you might get Wales versus Japan, and they've both decided
it just goes wild.
Brand new philosophy. And alternatively, you might get France versus South Africa.
Possibly they're absolutely hanging so tired that they just go, no, can we have a scrum? Let's have a scrum. Let's just lean on.
Yeah.
Let's just bend over and push for a bit.
Or, right, you start with your lighter pack and have your heavy boys. So if you are Wales, you've got limited heavy resources. You leave the heavy boys on the bench to change how the game might go.
But do you know in France they have rolling subs in the top 14?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do.
I love that.
So the big boys. So
even bigger players.
You see the big boys go off and think, oh yeah, job done, and then 10 minutes later they come back on again.
Yeah, so they have rolling subs in rugby league, as you well know, NRL, and we have it in level 7, or at least we used to. And we used to have 5 players to play with, and for some reason it's gone on to 3 now. But that led me to read articles on the NRL and how they use their subs, and they were saying that most of the points are scored in the last 20 minutes or last 10 minutes. So do you want your best team on to start with, or do you want your best team on to finish with? Who should be your subs? When should you use them? And that is interesting. I mean, that is exactly what we should do, because I don't think substitution strategy is particularly difficult. I think interchange strategy is really difficult.
Arguably, South Africa won a World Cup by being better than anyone else at that.
Yeah, but interchange just brings a whole new level of intellect into the game and options and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yep, like it.
Okay, so Phil's broadly okay with it. JB and I are broadly against this scrum suggestion, but we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
I'm in for it for the knock on though. I think that's a great idea. Any scrum.
Yeah, I'd be with that.
As in, you can have the option
scrum or a free kick.
If it's your choice, you choose.
Yeah. Right. Third phase, closed law trials, which would be having specific competitions or unions would have trials of these, and then it could be adopted in future years. So, number one, Tim's already mentioned this, expansion of the shot clock for scrum and lineouts, and reduced kicking time as well.
Do one.
No.
Just leave it with the refs. They know. It's like, it's your whole thing about the American definition of pornography. You know it when you see it.
Yeah, you know when you see it. That wasn't my definition. It's the High Court. It's the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, yeah. So you know it when you see it. Just let the referees get on with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it in trial, though. I would.
Okay.
Because I do think certain teams have used it to their advantage in the past.
As they should.
And certain games which have ended up being over 2 hours long because instead of referees kind of enforcing it, they've just given more and more time and just stopped the clock and just everything gets dragged out. So I'd like to see it.
Okay.
Which is what presumably we will do at some point.
We will do at some point, yeah.
Number two, ability to mark the ball inside the 22 from a restart.
Don't get this one.
Now,
the
bit that I don't get this is the final three words of this sentence. So, ability to mark the ball inside the 22 line from a restart, promoting attacking options.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So, you mark a restart, as in, you mark a kickoff to attack more?
No, to kick to just to kick, touch, so
yeah,
you have
to
a
just
line-out.
Slow things down and kick
so
it.
So, if you shorten that kick, it's pretty good for the chasing team, isn't it?
Which they can do anyway.
If it's good for
the chasing team, they
well, it's not an attacking option, is it?
They can do it anyway.
So the attacking option comes where you kick deep, I would say, and then that line starts to splinter because they're deeper, or they've got to get through standing traffic.
I think what they're trying to do is avoid those big collisions where a team chasing a kickoff smash someone just inside their own 22.
Yeah, I still don't understand why you take the mark, though. It's a hell of a dull spectacle of a kickoff mark. I mean, that's no way to start a test match.
No, but that's what World Rugby are suggesting could be the case. I don't understand the promote attacking option. I don't get it.
That's an awful one.
So if number one, you two don't like, but I'd be interested in seeing that one, I'm just not interested
maybe
in seeing.
Maybe a restart, but not a kickoff. We can't have international test matches starting with a kick.
Kick, mark.
Mark. You can't have that. That is thick.
It does say a restart, so maybe a restart which is not a kickoff, is not a restart. Although imagine. The second half is a restart, the first half is not a restart because that is the start.
Yeah,
well, that'd make it even more confusing.
So, yeah,
imagine that's... like all the boys are hyped up, the anthems have played, the stadium's going wild. What a, you know, people are watching on TV.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1 Ah, kick.
Mark.
He's marked
cheers,
it.
Cheers, Bill.
He's taking his time, stamping the ground, takes three steps back. And now he's running up and he's kicked it into touch.
Wonderful. Off you go for line out. No, that can't happen. Let's get rid of that one.
Number three. I'd be interested in getting your views because I've never really thought about this one. The ball must be played after a maul has been stopped once, not twice.
I don't see any need for this.
I don't really.
So, a lot of
what's
teams...
What's the problem they're solving here?
I've got no idea.
Well, that's slows things down.
Mauls stopping? Oh, okay, so the two things I guess could be discussed around this point. Number one is mauls are phenomenally powerful at the moment, which is good, fine. You can stop them, and when you do stop them, you open up space out wide.
They're phenomenally messy as well.
They're great.
Oh, they are great. They are great, but they're an absolute mess. And the number of defensive teams that just collapse mauls and never get penalised for it. That's my head in.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem. So maybe we want to be looking at the defensive teams, but you can't stop a maul. And when you stop a maul, you know, you've got to be very careful with this because the maul is one of the most important aspects of all of rugby to create try scoring opportunities. For us from midfield, it is from the 5 metres. As you think about it, it's all these things because unlike a ruck, you need to commit numbers to stop it, and it goes forward. So it's absolutely essential. And if you get your maul correct, there are a load. And so we've got a game which says it wants more scoring opportunities. If anything, you want to increase the threat of the maul, not decrease it. Yeah. So the second thing, which is
completely
of note,
get that logic,
is the call of use it. That's not necessarily what you think it is. It's not necessarily a call to aid the defence. It's sometimes a call to aid the attack because a lot of teams will use that as their trigger to then move the ball because it's been stopped once, you get stopped again, you're going to go for a scrum. So they're already doing that in a way. I don't know why they need to change this. I don't think it's broken even remotely. And if it is, it's more the point that Tim says, which is we need to penalise the defence for pulling them down. Because as they suck players in, they create what we all want. Well, I don't want it, but a lot of people want it, is space.
Yep.
It's one of the few ways you can manipulate space actively on a rugby field.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
So, a bit odd, that one. Next one. Protection of the nine at the base of the scrum, and the maul following successful trials.
How many games do you watch? These nines are just too exposed, too vulnerable.
Nope, never.
Successful trials in Major League Rugby and in elite and community competitions in New Zealand.
Do one.
I mean, if the nines are terrible in those competitions, I guess it's going to help.
Yeah.
But Danny Kerr doesn't need any more protection.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we've seen some trials in the community game, so we might introduce this at the elite level. No. Do one.
No, I'm fine with that. No. Yeah. I'm fine with how it is.
There's no problem to solve there, in my mind. And then the one that we've mentioned, and we all like, although JB hates it, of course, is play on for line-out, not straight if the throw is uncontested.
No, I do hate it because it's...
It's a new law.
Yeah, it's a new law. But as it hasn't been implemented, I like the law.
Yeah, it's one that we have been saying for years. That years and years and years. Maybe 10 years, and they're finally listening to us.
Yeah, to be honest, none of those are too bad, and they seem to be coming in reasonable times. The one which got me is like how they could just destroy Exeter's game by saying, "Oh yeah, no more of that thing that you do really well." Well, Exeter,
yeah,
that's
can,
completely.
Yeah,
over.
Can they reverse that? I hate the goal line dropout.
It's terrible. Why is this not gone yet?
Awful law.
Yeah, goal line dropout. It just seems to be promoting. It's benefits to the defence. Far too much.
Yeah.
I did see, speaking of weakening Exeter, I was at a rugby game this week. I was at Glossop versus Selby.
Oh, how was it?
It's nice. Good. It was ruffled conditions, especially in the second half. It was very cold, very high winds, and second half.
So that is level 5, isn't it?
Hammering it down. It's National 2 North East. So even
North East?
So even though Glossop are... in the northwest, they play in the northeast league, so they've got some long old.
So who's in that league?
Journeys.
With them? Manchester, Stockport. Oh no, because
northeast.
Yeah,
so Rochdale are in there. But then you've got...
Rochdale are in North East.
They are. But then you've got Selby, who are top of the table and were there today. Moulton and Norton, Goole, Old Brodleans, Dronfield, Moortown, Morley, Scarborough. Good old
friend up in Scarborough.
Good old away day. Bridlington and Old
Brodleans. I got punched. First ever punch I received in a rugby game was on Bridlington first team pitch as a 16-year-old.
Really?
Broke my jaw. A wonderful place. Loved it.
And Selby were a good outfit. They were well drilled. They had a very good driving maul. They had a very, very strong scrum. Very strong scrum. But Glossop, considering they are way adrift at the bottom of the table, they lost 18 lads going into this year. Some of them poached by better paying teams in the Northwest.
Ooh, like who?
Let's not point any fingers now, JB. Let's not name any names about any of these teams
who've poached. Who would be showing some cash about?
I have any of Glossop's best players. It's completely immaterial.
Well, Broughton Park have one from last year.
Oh, really?
It's not Broughton Park. Tock H. Our coach, Gov.
Yeah, he was the player coach at Glossop, wasn't he?
He was, I think, last year. Mm. I think.
Well, Glossop played very manfully, but good win sadly got beat.
Speaking of which, good win for Tock H yesterday.
Ooh, I played.
Did you?
All 80 minutes at Tighthead.
High flight. Nice. Well, Wilmslow have been on a good run of form recently. And they were
a strange team, Wilmslow.
That came to an abrupt end against the mighty Tock H.
Yeah. So, I was against the prop who had one of the most almighty tantrums I've ever seen on a rugby field in my life.
Because of you?
Yeah, so we scrummaged, and he was a replacement prop. And I felt he was coming in a little bit too much on my angle. So we stood up, and I said, he can't do that. And the guy, it's just an almighty tantrum. I was like, just calm down. Don't touch me. And then we scrummaged again. And he battered me. So it didn't go all my own way. He was actually a very good scrummager, but an incredible tantrum.
Well, the point I was going to make was Selby got done for pre-latching.
Did they?
5 yards out. Yeah.
God, I hate that law.
They did. They'd actually done it a couple of times. We were right behind the post by the clubhouse. And it was obvious even to me that they were doing it. And they got away with it. And then did it, scored the try, but disallowed because of a pre-latch. But it was really obvious.
Yeah.
It was like pre-latch as the ball is at the bottom of the ruck, and then the pass comes in, and then they just crash over.
What one of the score lines that I noticed in that league, JB's league, sorry, Bolton 3, West Park 5.
Warms the heart, doesn't it?
3-5.
And by the way, the conditions on Saturday in the Northwest, for those who weren't present, it was rough.
On a Glossop as well, because you're on a hill, fully exposed. The second half was absolutely brutal.
Bolton's pitch does feel very exposed. I don't know if they're at Bolton.
It's low down, but it's just exposed, isn't it, Bolton's pitch?
Yeah, actually.
You're not on the top of a hill.
Both West Park and Bolton are pretty exposed. Yeah, I mean, I've had some miserable grey days in West Park.
I've had one particularly bad day at Liverpool Sales, not West Park Sales.
Was that an evening?
It wasn't in the evening, it was a winter's day, and I think I nearly got hypothermia. I was in a bad way.
We are right now missing the game of the weekend.
Bordeaux.
Just a quick one. Wilmslow, who we beat on the weekend. Podcast listeners may well know this, but the team of your father. How does he feel about Louis and you in Broughton Park, which was their biggest historic rival? I mean, it's not a small rivalry. It was massive.
So back in the day, there was England players on both teams. So for Broughton Park, there was Tony Neary.
Yeah. Best not talk about him. We're not allowed to talk about him.
For Wilmslow, there was Steve Smith, England scrum half. Mm. So they were playing for England and for Broughton Park and Wilmslow.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it was a spicy fixture, that one.
Yeah.
God, what era is that? Is that 80s era?
That would be... Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, the story was in Wilmslow,
late 70s, early 80s,
that Will Collins showed up and said, expecting a game, and they said no.
You can warm the bench.
He understands we're going to our local club, but it has been pointed out that it's the historic rivalry.
It's crazy now to see them both at level
7.
Level 7 or level 8? Yeah, level 7.
Yeah.
Mm. I think Wilmslow will go back up really quickly. I think they'll be fine, actually.
It's a good club. No, we're missing the game of the weekend. So your beloved Bordeaux, Phil.
At home.
24-7 up at halftime.
Yes.
Peno doing ridiculous Peno things.
Standard.
Four tries in the first half. Game over. 24-7. Currently, Bordeaux 24, Toulouse 28.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Tries. Oh. Two tries from Labelle and Peter Arkey. One from Jack Willis as well. So four tries apiece, and
I was hoping my beloved Bordeaux would follow your beloved Bayonne with a win against.
I'll talk about Biarritz and Bayonne soon, but that is. Do you remember? It was about 4 years ago, I think. I'll talk about this on the. I will only briefly mention this.
Was it a playoff?
Yeah, playoff.
Yeah.
Was it Biarritz were in Pro D 2 and Bayonne were in the top 14. And
yes, I remember it.
It was the access match.
Yeah.
It was played at Biarritz.
And Steph Armitage scored the winning points.
In a penalty shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But when you realise, and I didn't realise, I knew that game happened and I remember Steph Armitage and stuff. Those two pitches, those two teams, 7 kilometres or like what is like 10 kilometres, like five, what they're 5 miles apart or 5 kilometres apart or something like that. The two grounds, it's wild.
Wow,
like
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know that is the game that you want to talk about. I just want to go back 1 second to
Wilmslow.
To Wilmslow.
Of course,
if I may. Do you know where Wilmslow get a lot of their success from? Why they are a big club and Macclesfield to a certain degree,
because
schools
they have.
Yes,
yeah. I was going to say schools, and they have people that do very well that come through the club, go on to do very well, and then they kind of it like alumni. At
yeah, big yeah. There's definitely that. So they've got Wilmslow High, which is a very good state school for rugby, obviously in Wilmslow.
King's Mac.
Now that. That it was a grammar school, but it's now a private school.
Yeah.
Right? And they are literally outside of Macclesfield Rugby Club. You could legitimately throw a stone across the road and hit Mac Rugby Club. Well, there's another school who's making waves in the Northwest. Would anyone care to guess who it is and why?
In the Northwest, well, there's a few, like Sedbergh, Stonyhurst, Kirkham.
Not one of them. State school.
State school.
Well, I say state school. It is a state school. You don't pay to go there.
Is it a grammar school?
It is a grammar school.
Altrincham?
Now I'm going to get... Is it Royal Lancaster Grammar?
Oh!
Kay, they lost the final of Roslyn Sevens.
Yeah.
That is an astonishing feat.
Yeah.
To the point that nobody knew basically who they were, and they got all the way to the final.
With... my friend Wilco.
Yep, coaching. Andrew Wilkinson at the helm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really is astonishing. And, you know, it sounds like a nice story now. I reckon the upshot of that will probably be you don't want to be playing people like...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Vale of Loon or... Preston anytime soon.
Yeah.
Or anytime in the next 5 years.
Yeah. If they keep some of those players particularly.
Or Lim. Fylde. I was like Lim and Fylde mixed up.
No problem. Rafi Quirk's Broughton Park under 16s already dispatched them in the Lancashire Cup.
No, it's too easy.
And beat the Cheshire Cup champions Lim last week as well. So, you know.
Yeah. Is Brian Ashton still doing? He was doing a bit of coaching there.
He is. I don't know his answer. He's always in and out of like Vale of Loon. There's always like whispers that he's gonna do something or says something.
And he was for a little bit, for quite a while. He's always helped out at Lancaster Royal Grammar School.
We are 50 minutes in.
try to drag it out.
Any other grammar schools or local rugby you want to talk about?
There are some more of the laws, but it's really then going on to the fourth and fifth.
Because I want to talk about Aylesbury.
So you want to talk about Aylesbury?
We'll do it later.
Defeat for them and Marlow, but never mind.
I know.
Should we talk about some rugby?
We're talking about rugby.
No one else
is talking about this. It's unique content.
Right, so let's start at the Tottenham Stadium. And firstly, let's start with what has become something of a... it's a conversation I don't think anyone in the officiating, broadcasting, or anything off-camera stuff wanted to be heard. But the TMO saying, no, I'm just going to pretend I haven't seen that because people will accuse.
I don't want it to look like.
I don't want it to look like Austin's
influenced us. Which that is a much worse look than missing it. Like genuinely missing it.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say about that.
Seeing a potential yellow, possibly red card offence. Seeing it and deliberately saying, oh, yes, I have seen it, but I don't want to deal with it.
That's a real
perception.
I hate to say this because I hate to be like, that's a real probity issue, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, but what this says is, because people have made this point, are the TMOs listening to commentary? Because sometimes the commentators mention something and then it feels like it comes up in that fashion. Clearly, the TMOs are or can listen to the commentary.
Yeah, yeah. And there's an interesting point. Is that good or not? So sometimes when So I'll give an example of this. I was watching the England game and Ben Earl gave away the last penalty for the France points. But I was watching it with the sound off for some reason. And I thought it was Manu Tuilagi gave away the penalty or...
Yeah, because it only gets signalled by the ref in one or two hits time. So without the sound, which I was watching it without the sound.
Yeah, did you see the same thing?
Yeah, so I was like, what the hell happened? Which hit was that? And it was only later when I rewatched it, and I was like, oh, it was the Ben Earl.
Yeah.
But it was then the TMO.
So commentary really does influence how you think about a game. So if I was watching that game, I might have given the same penalty. A slightly different penalty in the same place, but for a different tackle. So that is important because these guys are meant to be picking up things things that the officials miss out. However, in the same way that the officials are the absolute world-class experts at implementing the law, you would argue that the world-class experts of spotting what happens in a game are probably the commentary team.
And certainly those who have played the highest level, Oz and Ben.
Austin particularly picks up on things that a lot of other people miss.
I completely agree.
So as much as I want to criticise that aspect of it, and that's not the big issue for me, and it's really hard this, because I can't actually defend what he said.
Austin Healey's doing his job. Austin Healey is doing his job, and if he sees something and calls it as in, I think that's a bad tackle there.
That needs looking at.
As far as I'm concerned, Austin Healey's doing his job.
Yeah.
He's calling the game as he sees it.
And if they said, look, we listen to the comments because it helps us, I'm okay with that. But what I don't like is that comment from the official. And I think it's going to cost him.
It's a dreadful comment.
I can't defend it. I want to defend it. I want to sort of get him off the hook, but I don't think you can.
And his phrasing was, because we were late, it looks like Austin has highlighted it, and therefore that's bad.
Is it foul play, isn't it?
But that's exactly why you want the commentary on, isn't it?
I don't see why that's bad. His logic to say that that's bad, I don't think that's bad at all, because you've got someone who is in Austin, who's top of his game in the commentary world, who was top of his game in the playing world, who has a unique insight that TMO does not have. So it's, to me, it's not a problem if Austin spots a little bit more than other people, because Austin is literally one of the best people in the world to be spotting
that.
But then come a World Cup, which commentary do they listen to? The French broadcaster, the English broadcaster, and what difference might that make?
That's a great question, isn't it?
What you would have if you were watching a Premiership game and you didn't want to be listening to the commentary, to solve these gaps, you would have to pay for a neutral player who's not doing commentary but to sit alongside the TMO. But you're not going to do that for a Premiership because you don't have the money, for one. And two, it's unnecessary because you've got generally neutral-ish commentators. In the World Cup, where they are not, they are explicitly partisan in many countries.
Yeah.
Far more than in England, I believe. Then you just pay for a more neutral, or not more neutral, a neutral comms. You pick a non.
Yeah, well,
you
don't, when England play South Africa, have their own comms, don't they?
Well, when you, yeah, they do.
Yeah, so just use World Rugby comms rather than.
Or you pick if England are playing South Africa, pick the New Zealand comms.
Yeah,
like there's ways around that.
Yeah, I do see the point though, Tim. I mean.
Is it then open to abuse?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I guess the other problem here, right, is that if they were just using it and nobody knew they were using it, no.
Which
problem.
Is what we always thought, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I.
But now
I
we know that we know,
now that Pandora's box.
It has opened. It has opened.
But what about betting,
box?
Right? So I know you're not allowed to bet if you work for TNT or BT Sport. I'm aware of that. But if you now you know what you say. Can influence the referee, yeah. That's not good. No, and that's not another good. Damaging aspect
and
of it.
The thing is, I reckon if you'd have asked someone before this week, do you listen to, does the TMO listen to commentary? They go, no. I think they would have answered no. Whether or not they knew the answer was yes, was this an isolated incident where they listened to commentary? I would assume not.
I would assume not. It's unlikely that the first time anyone's ever listened to commentary, we happen to get this incident.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good.
Who was the ref?
TMO. I don't know. He was from Birmingham.
I feel sorry.
I do know.
I feel very sorry.
Don't know the TMO. I can't remember who was the ref in that game.
No, but what I do know from that game is Owen Farrell is so good at rugby. And so is Elliot Daly, who got so much shit during the Six Nations from England fans. So, he's amazing.
We'll be name dropping later on the Patreon podcast, no doubt. I was sat with Jackson Ray for a coffee on Tuesday, and we were discussing. I suppose a few times, but we've not actually been out for a coffee.
Oh, okay,
so
cool.
We went out for a coffee.
What type of coffee does Jackson Ray have?
Flat white.
Good lad.
Yeah, coffee for boys, innit? Yeah. And we started discussing. What a disgrace Harlequins are when they play Saracens. This is, I mean, I said it last time, they are a disgrace, and they are an absolute disgrace.
They got hammered earlier in the season.
Yeah.
And this was 52-7.
It wasn't close.
It wasn't.
It's embarrassing.
It wasn't even close to being close. It was an absolute beatdown, and the manner of the beatdown as well.
And it doesn't flatter Saracens, that scoreline.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I just don't understand how it happens. Like, Harlequins could go on to be champions and still lose every. They could be champions for 5 years running and still lose like this to Saracens every single week.
Yeah, it was a hell of a performance this from Saracens. Hell of a. And everyone looked good for Saracens. Even 42-year-old Sean Maitland on the wing, scoring tries, stepping defenders. It was a superb performance, but Quins were so bad. They allowed Saracens to.
It's not even a good Saracens team.
Find the wide channels so easily. The passing from Faz and the pace that was put onto it by Daly, by Maitland, by Sinti, who looked great, by Gonzalez and Earl, who found themselves in those wide channels. Just everyone found so much space, so fast out wide.
And just looking at the two packs, I mean, no one would ever choose that Saracens pack over the Harlequins pack, from what I can see. If you just had to pick an eight... As a unit, I mean, there are some nice matchups. Ben Earl is obviously absolutely amazing, but that Harlequins pack is legit. What a bunch of losers!
They were
absolute bunch of losers.
So just to put the 200, and again, I'll talk about this more on the Patreon pod, but just to put the 250 appearances for Owen Farrell into context, Rodrigo Capo Ortega, who I met in Castra, Uruguayan legend. He played over 400. I think he played 403 appearances for Castra, and he joined them at the age of 28.
Wow,
unreal. Anyway, but yeah, fair play, Owen Farrell. 250. He looked very. He looked and sounded very relaxed with a bit more limelight. Mm. I gather from what Mark McCall says is he didn't want any of the fuss that was made over him, but.
Oh, it's so boring. Everything is so boring and cliche. I didn't want the fuss. Oh, I'm so modest and meek. Shut up.
So you're not going to be a Racing fan next year?
I can't do it next year. But both Lancaster and Farrell. God. Just all be, both been so humble to each other all the time. No. And look, it is nice to praise Owen Farrell and all the rest of it. Ultimately, Owen Farrell's always going to look good in this in this fixture. I would look good in this.
Playing 10.
Yeah.
I mean,
in this fixture.
His
one of the passes, though, on a serious note, was absolutely spectacular. I don't know which one it was, but when it skips over the inside defender, it's like a miss four or something. It was absolutely outrageous.
He rarely gets praised for this. Or something I've said many times. I think you've said this as well, Tim. His range of passing and the quality, the speed, the way that he takes the ball to the line is absolutely sensational. It's the kind of thing that if Finn Russell or Danny Cipriani made
100%.
Half the number of passes that Faz does.
But you don't think it's the fact he can do it and just decides not to, which is so much more frustrating. Just decides, yeah, not for me, not for me. I can do it.
I don't think that's true, though.
It's not true in this iteration of this Saracens team.
He executes simultaneously. He plays like that for Saracens, and then was playing, and then the next game was playing a very different type of game for England. I think that speaks to the talent of the man. He will deliver. Mm. He has the capacity and ability to deliver whichever game plan the coach.
Well, let's
tells
not talk
him.
About Owen Farrell because no. we all know how, we, no, how we feel about him. What does it mean about Marcus Smith, though? I mean, what does it tell you about Marcus Smith that every time he sees anyone in black and red, he disappears? He just disappears. He doesn't have it in him. So I said this last time that they played, that he's not fit to lace Owen Farrell's boots. And that pains me to say. It has to be true. It has to be true. He is best paid Harlequin. But, he wants to be the England number 10.
According to I would say, during the Six Nations, the majority of England fans, they forgot how much they were clamouring for George Ford during the World Cup, and they were saying George Ford was just over it and old and past
it. The reason that not everyone can pull off a massive podcast is because they don't know what they're talking about, right? That's their opinion. Anyone who knows anything about rugby knows that George Ford is class. I just don't know what to make of Marcus Smith. So he's obviously got some talent. He's got a lot of talent. But he's never going to be the England 10. He's never going to be the full-time 10 because he obviously just doesn't have that mental game. He just doesn't have it.
I don't know if his team got pumped.
Yeah, I don't know if he is the team.
Like, he is the main man. You know, when England get battered, I usually would blame Owen Farrell first and foremost because he is the captain. Now with Saracens winning, I give him the praise too. It is the most important position, and if you're the highest paid and you're the captain and all the rest of it, and you know you're in charge of how the team plays itself, you've got to take responsibility. Owen Farrell was remarkably good, I agree. What does it say about Marcus Smith?
Yeah, Marcus Smith right now, he is... Well, if Farrell were playing, he would be the third choice 10 in England. He's probably now the second choice. Whether he'll ever get to be the first choice consistently for a long period of time...
He's a backup 15, I think.
I hope he can be. Well, he'd be the third choice 15.
I think...
Furbank, Stewart...
I think Stewart's out of the picture.
Maybe Daly. I'm not sure he is.
I think
I'm not sure Stewart
he'll be
is
used in special situations or on the wing or something.
Just because of that whole scrum thing and the laws, I went back over the final few minutes of that Rugby World Cup just to remind myself what happened.
Why did you do
the
it yourself?
The semi-final.
Yeah, the semi-final. Oh. England's
just let it go. Oh.
And it was the bit that bothered me more than anything to do with the scrum was Freddie Stewart.
Before
the scrum,
his bomb.
He caught the ball. Kick it long, Freddie.
Yeah, yeah.
He kicked an up and under, which landed in his own half, and he knocked it on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just kick it long, man. But anyway.
You don't have to find grass. No. Just
Freddie
kick,
Stewart's a
kick
fine,
and chase
fine
hard.
Player.
No, he's a fantastic player.
But here's the thing. I think they've realised that those two playmakers, because Furbank can play 10, and he's actually the fourth choice or fifth choice England 10, probably.
But yeah, he started a game at 10 for England.
He might have even started two of them, I'm not sure, but he's definitely started one.
Against France.
So, they know now that they need a playmaker at fullback, whether that be Furbank or Smith, it's not going to be Stewart.
I don't think that's always true. I think sometimes they will use that tactic, and sometimes they won't. Mm-hmm. I think Borthwick will play it at times. And if you're playing against a team who are going to kick to compete, you probably want Freddie Stewart in there.
I would argue it's, do you want to be reactive to what they're doing, or do you want to impose what England have actually been really good at for the last couple of weeks now? yeah, couple of weeks.
Two games.
Yeah, two games.
Yeah. So, yeah, well done, Saracens.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Harlequins, absolute disgrace. They should be... It's a shameful performance.
When I was watching that game, it did kind of cross my mind. Can Saracens threaten in Europe?
I've got no idea.
Because they play my beloved Bordeaux, who, I don't know if you've seen the full-time score, Tim.
No, what was it?
31-28.
To Bordeaux. Oh, wow.
They came back.
Bocheton try with 70 minutes on the clock. Wow, that was a great match.
That does look like it. We missed a great match there.
Absolute belter.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking, this is a hell... They are absolutely tearing apart Harlequins, who themselves can do things in Europe and have got a shot of getting through in Europe, particularly because Harlequins only play Glasgow at home. I say only. Glasgow are a good team. But it's not like they're travelling to Toulouse or facing La Rochelle or Leinster or one
Bordeaux.
Of those teams. Or indeed Bordeaux, as Saracens have to.
Yeah, I don't fancy Saracens' chances against Bordeaux one single bit.
No, not particularly. Unfortunately. Well, fortunately for my beloved Bordeaux, unfortunately wearing an English Premiership hat, which we occasionally do on this podcast.
Yes. Oh well. I want to say something else then about Harlequins, but it's gone.
There were some pretty ugly score lines when you look at it.
Yeah, really bad ones.
I was just comparing it to the top 14, actually, where there was one beatdown where Toulon just hammered Montpellier, but the other six fixtures, the combined points between the teams out of those six other fixtures is 18.
God, they're almost all... other than Stade Francais-Lyon, which is near the bottom.
Which was an 8-point.
Yeah, which was an 8-1. They're 1 and 2 and 3 points.
Yeah.
Every other game. Bayonne, 1 point. Perpignan, 1 point. Racing, 92, 2 points. Clermont, 3 points. Bordeaux, 3 points. Very close fixtures.
So it's a bit of a concern that, yeah, like the salary cap and all the rest of it in the Premiership is meant to equalise things. Bristol 52, Northampton 21.
But look at the table, though. That's the only thing I'd say.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I do agree. Bristol 42, who, Sale 24.
Which was only the last 10 minutes of that game, really. That was 24 okay. All with, 10-12 minutes left on the
Christ.
Clock.
I mean, just look at the back row that Bath have finally been able to put out. Good
and
God.
Barbary got taken off early. And they brought on Kurt Seer, who was looked really good. Carried a lot in heavy.
He's a violent, angry man. Very, very.
Ted Hill, Underhill, and Barbary. That's a sexy background.
Dynamite, isn't it? It's so nicely balanced.
So well balanced.
Yeah.
Oh,
and Hill looked good coming back. First time in quite a while, I think we've seen him.
They need to sort out their second row a bit, Bath. Like, it's not urgent. They're doing all right. I'd like them to have a big Launchby type fella in there.
Stooks a pretty big lad.
Yeah, but he's not
as big. Quinru was good, and you know, I was watching Yules today, and I think we've all not been the biggest Yules fan.
That's a fair statement.
He works phenomenally hard.
He does.
He carried a lot, and I can't remember who said this, but I remember some coach saying that his work rate and his ability to get back to his feet is second to none for a second row particularly. So he does work. He's not the heaviest, biggest hitter or carrier, but he does work.
And apparently his nose grew after he went to South Africa.
According to England vice-captain Ellis Genge on England's own social media.
I love the fact that got recorded and... Nobody would have picked that up. Maybe there's a Reddit thread somewhere that picked that
us.
the poor bloody media girl who posted that. Oh, it's a really good video. Look at the boys bonding about performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah, bit of friendly banter. Oh dear. So yeah, that was a good game, the Bath Sale, and it was very score one, like each side taking it in turns to score tries. until the last 10 minutes when Bath just pulled away.
But what's weird with the beatdowns, so Harlequins and Northampton on the receiving end,
yeah,
it's not that they were missing players.
Especially Northampton were.
No, the two packs.
Yeah, because Northampton don't really...
Broadly first-choice packs.
Yeah, because Northampton don't really have any internationals in their pack.
Yeah, I mean, the packs are... Well, the big difference to me is when I looked at these two teams was the back row. Yeah, Courtney Laws, Lewis Ludlam, Sam Graham, great. But the trio of Luatour and Bradbury, I mean, they are good.
They're very good. They are seriously good. Nobody, I think, if you'd have seen those teams and gone, oh, they look a bit... Or McParland's a bit inexperienced at nine. I honestly think you would have gone, yeah, Northampton will do them.
Oh, yeah.
I would have expected Northampton to win it, definitely.
I definitely did.
52-21.
But
what
the guy seems to be making things happen for Bristol in the last two games.
Pat Lam.
AJ McGinty. Yeah, Pat Lam. Magic Pat Lam. AJ McGinty's making a real difference. He actually looked quick. Did you see his break?
He did look good.
I'm trying to think which one was his break. He show and go.
He was sort of running what I can only describe as like a traditional Bristol shape, you know, when they start flooding around one side. And he split two props in half and then made the break. I was like, bloody hell, he can run.
I agree with you. I also think part of the reason he's playing really well is because Harry Randall's playing really well.
Randall is playing well.
And
yeah.
I think Steve Borthwick's got a choice, and it concerns the style of play. Does he want to go Jack Van Portvliet? Or Harry Randall. Those would be my two options as the third nine. And that will tell us a lot about how he wants to play. Because if he does want to go a bit faster, I think Harry Randall's playing brilliantly. But
Randall's a good guy to bring off the bench, isn't he?
Yeah.
It is a huge win. That
as Eddie Stevens from Rugby Ranter Banter says, little Harry Randall running with his candle. Good player.
Great win for Bristol. And do you know Bristol's... because I had to look back to remind myself, Bristol's last result in January, whenever it was, end of January, before the Six Nations.
Didn't they beat Bath?
They put 50 points on Bath as
well. Yeah,
yeah. So that's back-to-back games where they put 50 points on two of what were the top three. The top two teams in the table, Northampton and Bath. They are number one and number two.
An almost first-choice Leicester team lost at home. I can only think that
Gloucester.
Only George Martin is missing out of what would be their absolute first-choice team.
Yeah.
Oh, and possibly a loose head prop as well. Who's the loose head for Leicester?
Yeah, bad loss that. They'll anyway, be very
who started for them?
But you got Cole, Montoya, Chessum, Visa, Rafael, Liebenberg, Andre Pollard. I mean, it's a stacked team. And they lost at home. To Gloucester.
Yeah. That's not good. It's not good. It's a great win for Gloucester. Gloucester, who had some very sad news this week.
Atkinson?
Mark Atkinson has retired.
Sausage legs week? 10.
Just sure we mentioned that. That was
a couple of weeks ago,
Did we mention it last week?
Yeah, we definitely mentioned it.
I don't think we did. Did we?
Maybe on WhatsApp groups, maybe not on the pod.
Yeah, on WhatsApp.
It doesn't matter.
He's been a Phil replacement on podcasts.
Yeah,
in the past.
And I suspect we'll get him on very, 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 very soon to have a little chat. But it's his testimonial year too, so I obviously hawked out my services immediately to see if I could get a game. But he's already done that. He's done an event for Bath Gloucester. We've got like various dinners and golf games. But it's just, you could have waited until the end of the season to get injured. That's what I think.
Selfish.
But yeah. I'll definitely miss him as a player because he was absolutely phenomenal for ages in the Premiership.
Yeah, lovely player.
Oh, well.
But really good win for Gloucester. And they scored... It felt like an inevitable Leicester victory, this one.
Yeah.
Where Gloucester scored a couple of nice tries through Mercer and then it opened up for Harris kind of early on in the first half. And then... Leicester ground out four tries.
Yeah, so it's 17-8 to Gloucester at half time.
Yeah.
And then Leicester hit reset, score three tries, like you say.
Yeah.
Kata, Visa, Shilcock, game over, right? 77 minutes, Stephen Varney.
And it was a hell of a try as well.
It was a great try.
It was a beautiful try. Match-winning try was awesome. Fair play, Gloucester.
And then Santi Carreras did the rest.
Yeah.
Jamie Shilcock, did he come on at 15 or 10? They love Jamie Shilcock.
Might have come on at 15.
Well, let's have a look. Who did he get substituted for? Because he's kicking too.
Well, he might have come on at 10 then.
Doesn't even say he came on. He said he was on the bench.
He definitely came on.
22 minutes, he has his first kick, so I don't know what, know who he came on for. No idea. But yeah, they absolutely love him.
Yeah, he scored a penalty on 21 minutes, so he must have come. It must have been an injury.
Yeah, yeah. Pollard can't be on the field and not kicking, can he? That just isn't a thing that would happen in real life, is it?
Leicester have signed. Is he
Parisiya?
You're gonna have to give me
that Aussie centre,
the former rugby league.
Aussie centre,
yeah, utility back.
That'd be a Dan McKellar bit of insight, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
It's good. So that's the end of Leicester needing English centres. Dan Kelly and Guy Porter.
Off you go, boys.
Off you go, boys. Jog on.
Yeah, agreed. Although Gloucester do have an
Parise. Isaiah Parise.
That's the one.
An English centre in Seb Atkinson, and it can only be a matter of time until that boy's called up.
Well, he's one of kind of two or three when Manu goes two insides at stuff.
I mean, he was very good for Worcester.
Mm.
And that was about 2 years ago now that he first came on the scene. So I imagine that it literally just has to be a matter of time.
Mm.
And then Steve Diamond's been punchy with his media time this week.
What's he said? Dime watch.
Dime's watch. He basically was warning against his young players from going and just being basically a small fish in a big pond at the bigger clubs.
Hang on, isn't that exactly what you want to be?
Well, yeah, and he had a slightly barbed comment at Bath. He went, "I can understand players wanting to leave to go to clubs, you know, with a pedigree of winning trophies. The lads want to win trophies. Saracens have won trophies. Bath haven't." I might be paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said.
So, because one of the other things I noticed from Steve Diamond this
week...
I mean,
there are other reasons to want to live in Bath, isn't there, other than the northeast?
One of the other things that he said this week was, we've currently got a squad of more than 50... I can't do the Dimes accent like you, Tim.
Yeah.
We've currently got a squad of more than 50. We're aiming for a squad of 34.
So 34.
You don't have to have a first in maths to work out that there's going to be 18 to 20 players leaving.
Yeah, that's what he said. There's going to be 18 to 20 players leaving.
So,
and the same goes with the coaches. They're on. They're being judged right now as well. Some of them will stay. Some of them won't. So he's basically just got everyone on death row.
But
happy camp there, is it?
That's what he'll do. He's saying, "Boys, I'm going to get rid of 18 to 20 of you. But by the way, don't any of you think about looking for another job.
Yeah.
Don't go to a bigger club.
Don't go to Bath, for God's sakes." By the way, he would love to go to Bath himself.
He knows.
Bearing in mind, it's April next week. He basically went, "Yeah, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to let the lads know because they need to know." Make plans for other contracts. The lads that leave Newcastle, the contracts they'll be getting are National One.
Yeah.
Maybe bottom half of the Championship if they're lucky. There you go. There's 15 grand. Yeah. Come to Chinner for 20 grand. They're running away with National One, by the way.
So, just on Dimes' plan, I can tell you exactly what it is because, well, I've heard those numbers before.
Buy the club.
Yeah, you've heard.
He's going to buy the club.
As soon as I read 34, I was like, I know where this comes from.
Yep.
Two in every position plus a few wild cards.
And that's it. And that he'll use the money left over to give everyone a slightly higher salary than they'll get elsewhere. And he'll try and create a core of a very good team. Worked before, I guess it'll work again. And I'm sure it will. When you've got limited funds, he is the man. He is the expert. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Well, they put in on paper a pretty spirited performance against Exeter Chiefs, 25-16. Now, that does tell half the story because it was four tries to one.
Mm.
So Exeter, despite only scoring 25 points, they got a bonus point out of it. And Newcastle obviously got nothing. But were it not for that Obatoyinbo tap back, which is something I've seen twice now in the last 2 weeks. It wasn't even a 50-22, but I think he thought, because it was kicked from inside the Exeter half, I think he thought it must have been going for a 50-22. So, ball bouncing out 5 metres from his own try line. It's about to bounce out. He covers across, taps it back in field, falls over, injures himself, and he therefore can't get back up. And there is no other Newcastle player within 50 yards. And so one of the Exeter Chiefs players, Wimbush, I think it was, just jogs up and taps it over the line, which happened almost exactly play for play in the Sale FC versus Sedgley game.
Oh, did it?
Almost exactly. One of the Sale FC wingers did precisely that for Sedgley to score their second or third try.
Just on Exeter, one of the things I'm happy about is the return of a player that I really like is Richard Capstick.
I looked at that back row, Vermaelen, Capstick and Fisalau, all of whom can play number 8
across
the 6, 7 and 8.
Well, the roots, it wasn't Vermaelen.
It was Vermaelen.
John Vermaelen was on the bench.
Oh, so the team I've got actually has
Vermaelen started. Vermaelen
came in.
Cheers, Ultimate Rugby.
I think you're right. I think Roots... Was Roots originally lined
Roots
up?
Roots is not on the bench. Jack Dunn, Ross Vincent.
I think Roots might have been originally lined up.
Wow, so Ross Vincent, another number 8. Ross Vincent wouldn't have even been in the matchday squad.
Or I think it might have been Roots and Vince. Anyway. Oh, no,
boys. They've got
they
some
haven't
boys.
They?
I think it might have been Vermaelen on the bench covering second row and Dunn came in for him when he stepped up when Roots dropped out.
Right, understood. That makes sense.
I think. But yeah, regardless, let's say Roots is in there. So you've got Roots, Vermaelen, Capstick, Fizzleau, Vincent, all back rowers in one matchday squad.
And what's amazing? What is amazing about that is a couple of years ago, that would have been a who?
Oh yeah,
but Rob Baxter, he knows things.
Well,
the only one you would have
six
heard
months
of,
ago. That is a
six
who.
Months ago. That's a who. Yeah.
Yeah. 1 year ago, the only one you would have heard of would have been Vermaelen.
If you watch, say, Leicester Tigers every week, and you're into a Premiership rugby team, you probably still don't know who these guys are. You're either a rugby nerd or you support Exeter, and you still will not know who these guys are.
The only one you'll have heard of is Pizza Boy Vincent, because
he plays for Italy.
The comms every time he was on the pitch was he used to work at Domo's, used to be a pizza delivery guy.
Brilliant. Talking of comms, did you see somebody got in trouble this week for saying Kate Middleton had a body double?
So I've not seen it. I was actually chatting about this with my brother the other day, and I meant to look up how somebody was going to apologise for what she had been saying.
So we got an email this week.
I've not seen what has
we,
been
we
said.
Got an email this week asking if I would apologise to the same commentator for the comments that I made last week.
The comments that you made last week to the commentator were just that the line of questioning to, was it Michele Lamaro?
Yeah.
After his team got a win against Wales.
Someone emailed
in. How pleased are you that you're not terrible this year?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's just dreadful talentless.
So that's what you mentioned last week.
And I said, the interview should be shot. So someone's taking great exceptions to this because someone said the same thing to Diane Abbott and I should immediately apologise. And I just had to explain what a metaphor is. Like, it drives me wild when people take take language and take it literally, continually. But just as it would happen, the same commentator this week seems to think that Kate Middleton has a body double, which is fascinating.
Literally thought that.
Now, can anyone explain to me what this conspiracy theory is? Because I don't really get it.
Yeah, I can, briefly.
Go on.
So I
love a conspiracy theory. So I'm not criticising this commentator for that, because I'm all into conspiracy theories.
Okay, so
this was just such a middle-class one. Boring.
Yeah, it is. So Kate Middleton had not been seen for 73 days.
Christ, who counts?
There are people,
aren't
there? Believe me, there are a lot of people
had
who
not been seen for 73 days. Mm-hmm. Newspapers in other countries who aren't so partial to the royal family have suggested that there were blazing rows, arguments and stuff. And there have been lots and lots of talk about Rose Hanbury.
Who?
She's part of the aristocracy and rumoured in some places.
This is brilliant. Go on.
To have been Prince William's bit on the side.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Like Camilla to Diana, Rose Hanbury to,
well.
Kate Middleton. So there's that going on. That's bubbling along.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
There was a hashtag last year, which I don't know, pegging. Prince of Pegging.
No.
was a hashtag that was bubbling around last year.
Thing is,
all sorts of rumours about. By the way, I'm only reporting. You asked the question.
You're a diligent reporter.
I'm only filling you in on what people have said. I'm not saying what I believe.
Just on like the pegging stuff, right? I just want to revisit this.
Careful. If you don't know what that is, careful.
I had to ask in Paris when we were on there.
I had no idea what I heard.
No idea.
Well. I do have an idea, but here it is.
I do now.
Yeah, I do now because of that, right? But here's my point. If you are a bored aristocrat who sits around every day, are you not going to just, follow your most hedonistic fantasies to the nth degree? It's not like anyone's going to judge you.
To the nth degree?
Yeah, probably. Well, it's not like you're worried about turning up to work tomorrow, is it?
To each his own. It's none of my business.
Absolutely not.
Whatever people get up to in their own home, none of my business.
If I had nothing to do all day other than wander around my stately home, and I can't show... This is the thing about the royals. They can't show really that much wealth. They're very... what's the word for it? They're not ostentatiously wealthy despite living in castles.
They have to show some modesty.
Yeah, modesty. Yeah. They're very, very modest. I mean, what else would you? Where else is that your outlet? I'd be all over it. What else would I'd be building dungeons?
You'd be all on it.
All sorts of things.
Anyway, so that's all the other stuff going on in their marital life.
Yeah.
Not going on. I'm not saying it's going on. That the internet has done its thing.
Yeah, there are those accusations
and suggested that's what's going on. So she hasn't been seen since Christmas Day. The children haven't been seen since Christmas Day. The couple haven't been photographed together in that time. There was a planned operation, apparently, which abdominal surgery.
Not a random one, though.
Is what was planned.
Yeah.
And also, some people have said that in the time she was in hospital, no one in her family, William, the children, did not visit her.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know what the rumour was. So there's lots of silly rumours flying around. But anyway. There's lots of strange things. Which when you put all these individual things, which may or may not be true together, it does build quite a strange picture.
They are strange people, though. They live in castles.
They are strange people.
They live in castles.
I mean, I tend to subscribe to Occam's Razor, which is the most... the simplest answer is...
I cannot imagine the hobbies that I would get up to.
Most likely.
Yeah. There's this weird phenomena of the youngest member of a aristocratic family going to the church. Do you know this?
No.
Yeah, so, you've got a bunch of aristocrats and, the number one becomes like the next lord of the manor and number two does something else, number three. So the youngest one, you often ended up in the church. Now, when you go to the church, you have nothing to do. You get paid for, you get your food, you get board and whatnot, but you also get literally bored, which results in priests and, priests, vicars, so on and so forth, inventing all sorts of weird stuff because they've got a bit of money, they've got loads of time. I'm pretty sure it's the clergy that invented things like fireworks. So you've got all of the...
Was it the Chinese that invented fireworks?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. But there's a really good chapter in Bill Bryson's book about crazy things which priests have invented.
I mean, I do know priests, monks, same thing. Mm-hmm. Famous for making beers and wine and book fast and that kind of thing.
Yep. Essential stuff.
Yes.
Again, if you had nothing to do all day, would you not invent new ways to get hammered?
Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. So, anyway, back to that. So, the conspiracy theory is that...
So lots of people have pieced all these individual things, which I don't even know if they're all true anyway. I'm only saying what the internet has said. And some people decided that there's much more that goes on. Some people have said the most ridiculous things, which is something's happened to Kate Middleton and she's not really there.
Crikey.
There's other people that have said that... their using body doubles to fake photographs. I mean, the Photoshop thing was a bit weird the other week.
That was weird, wasn't it?
That was weird.
That was really weird.
But then whenever things like that happen now, and I go, that was so obviously bad, they must... I wonder if they wanted us to see that really bad Photoshop thing to cause... I don't know. I don't tend to get involved in any of this. But the one thing that I've taken out of this is some of the ridiculous titles that there are in the aristocracy in the UK.
By the way, and this is a rugby story, because, of course, Kate is what?
She is the...
patron of rugby.
Patron of the RFU.
And rugby league.
Yes. Mm. And
she just loves her rugby.
And isn't William the... connected to the Welsh rugby
WRU.
As well. WRU.
Yeah,
I think he is, as Prince of Wales.
But Rose Hanbury, who I'm not accusing of having had an affair, but the internet said they were. This sounds made up.
Can I ask, is Rose Hanbury fit, or am I not allowed to ask that?
I don't know.
I'm going to look her up now.
I don't know. The Marchioness of Cholmondeley. Just sounds made up.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Anyway, it was only when I saw this story about this rugby luminary wading in on this particular topic that's the only reason I actually looked at what was going on in this whole story.
Wow.
And I've just been to check whether said rugby luminary has apologised, and tweets are protected. So maybe.
They did an apology of sorts and then...
After being part of the media voice that ousted a cancer patient, they decided to do the right thing and put their tweets on private.
Probably for the best.
Yeah. Oh, I'm disappointed with Rose Hansbury.
The Marchioness of Cholmondeley.
I mean, Oh, well. Each to their own.
You had to find another bit of aristocracy to lust over.
Well... that will be an internet search for later.
Speaking of which, I saw I watched Napoleon last night.
Oh, yeah.
And it's good. It's good. I don't know how accurate it is. Yeah.
Well, which Napoleon? Isn't there like 12 of them or something? There's like 5 different Napoleons.
Is this what Sonia McLaughlin said?
body doubles from the 19th century.
Very good. Very good. God knows what she makes of the Curry twins. Oh. Yeah, okay, we'll leave it there. Oh, actually, I'll talk about CrossFit whilst we're just not talking about rugby.
Yeah, go on then.
So, have you been watching Northampton's strength and conditioner on... it is Instagram.
No, but no. I've read a bit about his approach to pre-season and the fewer than 10K per week... less than 10K per week and very heavy... weights and mass increasing.
So I don't know if you know, but I'm partial to a front squat. I do enjoy a front squat.
Mm.
And there was a player front squatting in a Northampton video, and it was big. I mean, it was big. I can't remember exactly what it was. So I've just found them a quick message, like, who was that? And what was the best front squat? It was Owen Franks at 230 kegs.
What?
Yeah.
And I was like, Jesus Christ, that's heavy. That's unreal. And then I had to think about this. And the first time I'd ever seen CrossFit was, does anyone know? When I think it came across we might have even mentioned it on the podcast in the early days. Cool. Owen Franks owns a bloody CrossFit box.
Ah.
He was a really early adopter of CrossFit, or at least someone in his family did. And the Franks boys were training CrossFit from a very early age, which makes sense why he's so good at Olympic lifting.
Well, possibly. I wonder if it's connected, because two of the earliest people I know from CrossFit were Alex Corbisiero and John Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
Who had a box together, or had a gym together.
In Bristol.
Had a gym together. Was it Bristol, or were they... I thought they were... Was it London Irish, or was it... No, it was Northampton. I thought they were both there at Northampton.
Yeah,
they were.
Yeah, but Fisher moved to Bristol. He lived in Clifton. I don't know how I know that. I don't know. But he does. He lives in Clifton. So, yeah, 230. Now, I don't want to brag. Am I just hit a 137.5 clean?
Mm.
Not bad.
Very handy.
Very good. That's very good.
It's getting there. Soon I'll be strong. Soon. But not as strong as some of the bloody...
230 front squat.
Let me just check my Instagram. And I'll tell you exactly what was said.
Bonkers.
Oh, crikey.
Because just to...
Frank's was a serious...
Because to strain that... Like the, to keep it in that position.
I think the front squat's much, much safer than the back squat.
Oh, I'm not talking about safety. I'm talking about difficulty. Because you have to get that elbows up position to keep it racked.
I guess so. But that doesn't really bother me, if that makes sense. It bothers me more that my back hinges on a back squat, whereas you can't do it on a front squat or it'll fall off your shoulders. So you've got your neck preventing the weight coming forward, whereas on a front squat you've got to be super strict and keep your back straight.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it's all isolated on your legs, whereas the back you can kind of good morning it up.
Oh, it wasn't 230. It was 210.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, 210. 210. And they get up to 170 on a normal day. So actually, 170 is all right. I could hang out in that gym and do some front squats with them. In fact, that's what I might do. I wonder if I might message them back.
Impressive.
Isn't it?
Impressive. Right, should we...
fixtures next week?
Yeah, what are the fixtures next week?
We should just mention that JB, your beloved Blues, hammered the Crusaders.
Oh, I'm well aware. I watched every second of it. Just a moment, what happened?
I've not seen any of it other than, I think they've lost 5 out of 5 now. Crusaders.
Have they?
Yeah. Fallen apart.
Oh, dear. That wasn't good.
Hurricanes are top of the league. Hammered the Rebels.
Wonderful news.
5 out of 5.
How are the Australian teams doing?
Struggling against the New Zealand teams.
Right.
Okay against themselves, I guess.
Moana Pacifica?
They've had a couple of good wins. I'm not sure, can't remember how they did this week.
Of course, I think...
Fiji drew a loss to the Chiefs.
Oh, did
week.
They? What was the score?
46-29.
Oh, bloody hell. Big score then.
Mm. And Moana Pacifica won away at the Western Force, which is a good win.
Good. Should we do next week's games and go?
Actually, that was last week, but...
We've got no more.
Anyway,
we've got no more Kate Middleton news to do. So,
not for another few days.
No.
Right, next week's games. Falcons host Tigers.
Doesn't matter.
Both teams lost. Tigers are going to write that wrong. They're going to hammer Steve.
Let's
Dan
do the four serious games.
Saints host Saracens.
Saints host Saracens. Good game.
So it always used to be that. Saracens would lose and then hit factory reset by absolutely pulling Northampton's
pants
down. I think
one year they battered them 5 times. I can't remember how that happened. It was twice in Europe.
Yeah.
Twice in the league. And they saw them another time and battered them again just for good measure.
How's that one going to go? So Saints,
I'll say Saints at home. Saints at home.
Oh, did they see him in did they see him in the semis?
Maybe.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah. Northampton at home. Oh, I'm at, excuse me, at home.
I want to say Northampton are going to...
I reckon Saracens are going to rest their England players.
Yeah. Well,
where are they in the league, Saracens, now?
They are third in the league, so they will want a home semi-final. Although, they'll back themselves to do anything, but they will rest a few players because they played most, not all of their England players, but most of their England players, save for Marrow... I think, and they are going to go 100% for Bordeaux. It might not be enough, but they're going to go for it. So, give me Saints at home.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably Saints, I'm just looking, Saints host Munster, so Saints have got a home round of 16 game in 2 weeks' time. It's only 2 weeks' time. Right, other fixtures. We have got... On the Saturday, Gloucester host Bristol.
I hate to say it, but Bristol. Just the form book seems to be on their side.
I'll go Gloucester, Premiership Cup champions.
Are they?
Beat Leicester away.
Hang on. Is this at Bristol or at Gloucester?
King's Home.
I might go and watch that. I might go there in person and watch it.
Do it. That'd be a good game.
Yeah.
Give me Bristol. Because Bristol, it is... It's not impossible for them to make top four. And they've got the form. They are the only team in the league who've won their last 3 games.
Quinn's, I agree with you on that. Sorry. I think Gloucester will win nevertheless, despite that. But you're right about Bristol's run of form. Bath Quinn's feels significant, this one.
Well, yeah. Bath want to be in the top two. They've got to keep winning.
Another Quins. Loss for Quins, and you think they're probably, they could be close to being done.
Yeah, because they've lost their last two games as well. So, Quins have to win that. And then, I mean, in 2 weeks' time, the week after that, Bath travel to Exeter, Quins host Glasgow. So, European Cup is going to be important to both of them. Give me Quins at home.
I think Quins at home.
It's a more favourable fixture for Quins. I mean, it's hard to imagine a less favourable fixture than Saracens for Quins, but give me Quins at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday Sale play on Sunday again, this time.
Sale Chiefs.
Hosting the Chiefs.
Didn't talk about Chiefs beating Newcastle, but...
Do we need to... No,
we did.
We did.
Didn't say
yeah.
Both.
Yeah. Sale Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Chiefs, Sale are in free fall at the moment.
Yeah, I do worry about that. I really worry about it.
Mm. Nevertheless, I'm going to go for Sale at home.
Mm.
Hoping Sale. I think Chiefs.
There you go.
I can watch that one too. That'd be a nice weekend. Mm. Two Premiership games on the weekend. That'd be great.
Treat yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Let's have a little quick natter on Patreon and then get the hell out of here.
Roger.
Perfect.
That.
Perfect.
Let the boys end.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.